But we have Stu and Gainer with us today, which is a wonderful blessing. And so it's taken a little while to get Stu and Gainer booked in to come and share. I know that you guys, Stu, I think you were here a few weeks ago. You were both here a few weeks ago, I think. But it's the first time we've been able to have you come and speak. So since your return, they've been working with all the different teams within City Valley across all three sites, particularly the site leadership teams, which is myself and Naomi, and then others from the other two sites as well. And just bringing leadership and wisdom and continuing to help us seek God and his guidance for what the future City Valley Church looks like, because we don't want to be static. We want to be a people that continue to be on the move. And so actually we want to continue to be saying, God, what does the next season look like? What are you leading us to next? And so it's been great to have their leadership within that. Naomi and I personally really valued their input and their encouragement, that we meet with them pretty regularly. And it's just great to know that they're praying for us, that they're carrying the heart and the vision of not just Airedale, but the whole church. And so it's wonderful just to receive their encouragement and their guidance and their leadership in that. And that means that you might not see them very much on a Sunday here, which means because they'll be at other sites, so they'll be either in Bradford or in Shipley, but also supporting other churches across Yorkshire and the North East. So as part of their role in kind of being apostolic mothers and fathers, that they will move around different churches and just bring encouragement, bring wisdom and guidance to other churches within the area. And that's been, I know it's been so well received and such a blessing to us as a group of churches in Yorkshire. But like everybody else, Stu and Gainer need to have a home base, to be a place where they can be known and loved and cared for. That is so important, to be linked into family, being linked into local church. And so Stu and Gainer spend, that for them is the Bradford site. So over with Thomas in Bradford. They're not part of the leadership team, but they do just want that to be a place where they can build relationship, where they can be known and be loved by others. So as I said, much of what Stu and Gainer do in City Valley is hidden, is behind the scenes. And so, Gainer, it would be great for you to fill us in a little bit more on what life looks like post-sabbatical, and how God's using you guys.
It's so good. I love being with you. In the words of Bruce Forsyth, don't tell everybody, but you're our favourite. Except I said that to the Spring last week as well. Okay, so we'll say that to Shipley. It is hard to split our hearts. I mean, in terms of it being our home church, a lot of the Sundays we will be moving around. And so we expect it will just be the small group, in the midweek. And they will just be the pastoral support for us, does that. So, but it is hard to split our heart from week to week, do you know what I mean? Like to the family. Do you know what I mean? It's like having your family in three locations. But I tell you what, when I come here, I feel loved. I feel part of your family. It's deep watered and I feel emotional. Because I feel it. Your family, Christ family, kingdom family. We can't underestimate how beautiful it is. And to worship with you this morning was beautiful. There's a slide that says Christ Central Churches in Yorkshire and the North. Thank you, thank you. We just thought, you can hear about Christ Central and it's obvious you're just going to be mainly concerned with the family dynamics of here in Airedale. But I just thought it would be good to give you just a wider little bit of glimpse, do you know what I mean, of we are oversee in a sense of organisational leadership, just the relational dynamic of these churches getting together under Christ Central. So it's the region of Yorkshire and North East. So you can see you're part of that. Do you know what I mean? But these are all the other churches that, there's a team of us, and mainly we just get together probably every sort of 6 to 7 weeks just for the encouragement, pray together, talk about what's going on in our churches, seek the Lord, seek his voice, and build each other up in the Lord. That is basically what we do. Family on mission, but it's a wider family. And obviously, often as church leaders, you feel quite just in your own sort of space, but this is a place where you're sharing with other leaders and you can gain strength from their journey as well and their experiences and their expertise. One of the things by being in a wider network like this is what you've experienced is you share ministry And you've had the benefit of having Steve Hurd, who's part of the ARC Huddersfield, in his ministry as an evangelist to the church, to come and equip the church to witness. And we get the benefit of sharing that ministry and seeing you grow as you're equipped and just hearing the results of the fruitfulness of your alpha that you've just done. So that's the whole thing of being in a wider network. We can share gifts, ministries to build up the church. We've been going around, we've been enjoying a bit more space to go and visit these churches. I just want to tell you about two of them. Darlington in Kings is one of the more established churches. It has an active food bank and food store, well respected in the community, a cafe. What's really interesting, that their church leader went on a sabbatical. And in a sabbatical, you always have aims on your sabbatical. You don't just go into a sabbatical. It's not a holiday. There's aims to it. And his one was he was going to go around 10 churches in the northeast, and he was going to look at them. Are they word churches? Do they believe in the word of God? Do they absorb the spirit that we need, the spirit of Christ? And are they family? And he went around 10 churches. He said not one church could tick all three boxes. And he came back and he felt the Spirit say to him, you are an established church that's developing leaders. Now is the time for you to church plant. And they are looking at Mask and Saltburn on the East Coast. M&S, they're calling it. The M&S may be potential church plant. And it's just lovely to see how God is leading them as a church to now give away and give out. So that's just a joy just getting to know Mike and the team there. The other one I just wanted to tell you about was York Gateway. They have had a small missional group that has been going out on Thursday evenings. They have food together in a local housing estate that is very deprived in York. And it's just been beautiful. We've been able to coach them. We're part of the church planting team, and we coach them probably every month and on the whole thing of how they're doing and reaching out. They've just run an alpha. Two people have come to faith through that. And we went along just to have food with them and seen them disciple together, not just disciple apart, but these two women and their families being discipled all together as a family with the team. And it was just beautiful to see. And I think that so echoes a little bit of Bradford's heart, do you know what I mean, and the way they're doing a church down in the centre of Bradford. So every time we come, we want to give you some stories because we get the encouragement when we go around these churches. But this is what you're part of. And I know Viv and Naomi, they gain the benefit of hanging out with the leaders of these churches. So this is what Christ Centre are about. It's a relational church. It's a relational movement. And we need each other. All right? We're family on a mission. I think that's the New Frontiers logo, wasn't it? So, yeah. Hopefully that's helpful for you. If you've got any questions, please come and ask us. Do you know what I mean? Just say, don't just sit on them. We'd love to answer them. Do you know what I mean? About Christ Central. Yeah? Oh, I think I'm introducing this man. I don't know him. Sometimes I don't think I know him. You know, you could be married 31 years and still think, I don't know you. Anyway, I do know him, and I do love him. So over to you, Stu.
Thanks very much. That's great. Well, no, I just really echo all of that. It is such a joy to be here, and just really, really feels like home from home, obviously. I still, one of my favourite moments, we'll get this a bit higher, that's good. I think we're all right there, aren't we? Yeah, that's good. Yeah, just loved... like the time, I think it was about just before the pandemic, those 6 months of seeing Airedale like planted and just, you know, here every week. And I just loved the coming together of seeing what God is doing here, but just the trajectory in your heart, not just for Eastburn, but all the surrounding areas. Right, so it was actually in one of the Yorkshire and the Northeast kind of leaders get-togethers back in February when Gain and I were like sharing our sabbatical reflections, and Viv was there, and I was sharing a bit about Psalm 131, and Viv said, like, oh, can you do that? What you just did, can you do that for us in our series on Psalms for the summer? So I have changed it a little bit, but it is pretty much what I shared with the leaders. And so we're looking at Psalm 131. It's brilliant that you're in this series on Psalms for the summer. And I've caught up and listened to some of them online. Actually, obviously, a few things that Naomi kicked us off with a few months ago was that the Psalms, obviously, is a songbook. And I can remember as a teenager discovering this, and I don't know what the rest of my house or my neighbours felt, but I was a bloke and a teenager and didn't really know how to speak, but I could play the guitar a little bit, and I could read. So, like, I used to sing the Psalms. It's like, I knew four chords, and I just, like, would sing my way through the Psalms. But I found it a real release, actually, of emotions when I was doing that. You know, like, I don't know if the different things that went on, like my art teacher was not happy with what work I'd done. I'd go home and I'd pour out my sorrow, or, you know, a girl that I liked said no or something like that. I'd get back and get the guitar out. And just the...
I don't know why you get the guitar out.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. It's just actually that and speaking in tongues. As a person who didn't really know, you know, how to articulate a relationship with Jesus, and I still would say, you know, obviously praying for the teenagers going off to New Day in a couple of weeks' time, that just they would, at that age, to encounter the Holy Spirit, to receive the gifts, is precious. And there was something during those years of singing the Psalms, speaking in tongues, not really knowing how to speak properly, but actually God helped me grow in my relationship with Jesus during that, that just has kind of set my course. Anyway, so you're in this series and we're looking at Psalm 131. So let's have a read. It's helpful that this is a very short psalm. So, Psalm 131. Verse 1. O Lord, my heart is not lifted up. My eyes are not raised too high. I do not occupy myself with things too great and too marvelous for me. But I have calmed and quietened my soul. Like a weaned child with its mother. Like a weaned child is my soul within me. Last verse. O Israel, hope in the Lord from this time forth and forevermore. So before we go through this verse, psalm by psalm, I'm just going to tighten up this top of this lectern. There we go. So before we go through this psalm verse by verse, I just want to make a comment about gender. I think Vivian has noticed has already done that. But as you know, there are many Bible verses that describe God as Father God. You know, the Lord's Prayer, how does it start? Our Father. But here we have God, interesting, isn't it? Here we have God being described with female characteristics, like a mother with a weaned child. And there are a few other passages in the Bible that talk about God as like a mother hen and gathering up her chicks. And actually this echoes what we read in creation, you know, in the creation account in Genesis 1:27. Just got the verse there, you know. So God created mankind in his own image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. In other words, both our maleness and our femaleness reflect the image of God. So we see this in Scripture. So it's like a really helpful that we've got these illustrations that illustrate both that reflection of maleness and femaleness in God. Right. So, a bit of background on this psalm. So it is in the classification that Naomi brought to us. There's these five different sections or five different books in the 150 chapters of the Psalms. And this is the fifth section or the fifth book in the book of Psalms. Can anyone remember what that categorization is? Praise, yes, or I think the slide, you'll have to go back a bit, Toby, if you can find it, but it's party. It's the books of party. And actually, there's a subsection of that, and it's called the Songs of Ascent. So this is one of 15 Songs of Ascent, and it's attributed to David, and it would have been sung by pilgrims. So ascent, you know, going up, they're traveling up to Jerusalem, and they'll be in groups, they'll be singing these psalms as they go to the temple, to Jerusalem, to one of the feasts that they would go to, like the Passover. And actually, many commentators suggest that David wrote this particular psalm not really in a happy place. He was actually being pursued by King Saul. You know, King Saul was after his life. And he was actually having an internal moment where David, who had been promised to be the next king of Israel, obviously Saul was the king, but David had already been prayed over, you're going to be the next king, but he's like defending himself against false accusations of being ambitious or being proud, you know, having these proud schemes to try and get the throne. And it's really a test, actually, he's going through. Will he trust in God's timing, or will he take matters into his own hands and kind of get rid of King Saul? It's interesting, isn't it, that actually, you know, God, you know, David was going through a test, and actually, you know, we won't face that test, but we'll face different tests. Tests that grow us, tests that grow our trust in Jesus, tests that grow our character. There's different tests that we'll face. I can remember I was probably seven or eight years married, and the house we were living in had a dodgy boiler, and every time it went out, you had to kind of blow on the pilot light. I don't know if you've ever done that, but you have to turn it off, turn it on, and just get it going again. But I think it was one of those weeks where we'd all been ill as a family. Natalie wasn't well, and it was early in the morning, and the heating had gone off. And I can remember just, you know, Natalie was crying. I'm sure, you know, like I'm just conscious of like, oh, there's just these pressures of life. And I'm blowing on the boiler. What on earth is happening? What's going on with my life? I'm blowing on the boiler, trying to get the pilot light lit. And I just hear the Holy Spirit say to me, this is a test. And it just changed. It just reframed that whole moment. Because it's like, actually, I want to receive your love as a loving father. And I want to love on Gaynor and Natalie in that moment as I'm blowing on the boiler. And it was just really helpful. But it's like, actually, yeah, I want to grow in patience. I want to grow in love. And there are these things, there are these circumstances that come in. Right, so, verse 1. So we see in this test, David, he goes all guns blazing against one character trait that he's aware of in his own life, that actually we all suffer from. And of course it's pride. So let's just have a look at this. So he says, O Lord, my heart, and he's like speaking to himself, my heart is not lifted up. My eyes are not raised too high. I do not occupy myself with things too great and too marvelous for me. It's like he's going to war on pride. Can you see that? Like he's renouncing all self-reliance, self-exaltation, and self-rule. You know, so he's going for pride. He's going for pride at the heart level. You know, my heart is not lifted up. He's going for it at the appearance level. My eyes are not raised too high. And he's going for it at the action level. You know, I do not occupy myself with things too great and too marvelous for me. It's like he's putting up three kind of barriers or three doors to kind of barricade himself out, create distance between himself and pride. So like David, we must proactively and intentionally battle pride. Keep it out. Why is that? No. Why is it so dangerous? Why was David aware that this is such a dangerous thing and it's so important to do battle with? Well, answer this question, I turn to a few famous Christian theologians. And Timothy Keller, he frequently describes pride, and I think we've got a slide up that has this. So he frequently describes pride as the illusion that we are competent to run our own lives and find worth without God. So that's essentially what pride is the root of all offence to God, really. It's like it's us who have been created by God, created in his image, saying to God, I don't need you. I'm going to conveniently forget that you've created me. I'm the ruler of my life, and I'm going to go off and do my life in my own resources. It's like, I was trying to think of another picture. It's like, I don't know if I've heard different parents talk about this, where they have, like, I don't know, a three-year-old child and gets in a huff and decides to pack his little bag and leave home and announces to the family, I'm leaving. And it's like that. And you hear stories where they let them actually walk down the pathway and then you know, the three-year-old comes back. It's like the concept is of that, you know, this child in this loving, wonderfully loving home deciding to clear off. Thomas Merton, the Trappist monk and author, defined pride as this ultimate form of separation from God and others. He describes it as a deep spiritual delusion where a person views themselves as the absolute center of the universe and use others to boost their own ego. Or C.S. Lewis in Mere Christianity, he argues that pride is inherently competitive, where it derives no pleasure out of having something, but only out of having more of it than the next person. Or I love coming back to Keller. Keller terms pride as, I just have to think about this, he describes it as cosmic plagiarism. So plagiarism where you kind of copy or you take someone else's work and you own it for yourself, like students will maybe, I mean the whole AI things, but anyway, so cosmic plagiarism, but it's basically where you claim, like, I am the author of my own life and all my successes, all my gifts, they come from me, rather than actually they're a gift from God. Right. Question. I want to get on to verse 2, because every verse is important. But before we get on to verse 2, it's good to ask the question, how much do I rely on myself? How much do I kind of live in this delusion that I am the center of my life? How much do I rely on God? How much do I exalt myself? How much do I exalt God? How much do I rule my own life? Or how much is Jesus the one in charge? So for me, in my sabbatical, actually, because, like, as Viv said, we hadn't had a sabbatical for a long while, and I just realized, actually, it was a real eye-opener to me that I hadn't, like, I'd picked up bad habits, almost like a slight, you know, few degrees out, and then over a few years, think, oh, actually, yeah, I'm starting to operate as if I'm drawing on my own strength, my own resources, and actually taking myself too seriously, you know, getting into habits of feeling like I'm the rescuer, able to come in and help with situations, and just thinking that what I was doing was more important, and almost dragging God along with what I was doing, rather than the other way around. And actually, the sabbatical was really helpful to actually just have that reset and go, oh my word, you know, I realized I hadn't prayed the prayer in Psalm 139, where David says, "Search me, O God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. Point out anything that offends you and lead me into the way everlasting." So that was like, I wrote out that prayer, and every morning I'd pray that, because I needed this correction. You know, that actually since the pandemic, I'd shown signs of not having quietened and calmed my soul, and gradually over time, like, sped up in my own strength. So, moving on to verse 2, I think it's just good, isn't it? It's good to ask ourselves the question, you know, where are we most vulnerable to pride? Is it at the heart level, you know, feelings of self-importance? Or actually the inverted pride, which is like feeling that, you know, you're worse, that woeful feelings, woeful thoughts, and, you know, either one or the other. Feelings of superiority or feelings of inferiority? Or is it at the appearance level, you know, where, you know, we read, "My eyes are not lifted up"? And that's the whole thing of boasting or exaggeration. I mean, it's, you know, obviously all of this affects all of us. And I mean, social media is a good example. I don't want to have another bash at social media, but it's so easy to portray our best front, which isn't necessarily the honest thing that's going on in our lives. And then thirdly, you have the whole area of our activity, which is definitely where I was at. I was busy thinking that my world was important, and actually we can fill our lives. Overwork or busyness is a sign of you know, this kind of thing. So just have a pause before we look at verse 2. What area are we most vulnerable to pride? So, verse 2. "But I have calmed and quietened my soul. Like a weaned child with its mother, like a weaned child is my soul within me." So just thinking about that illustration, what's an unweaned child like? So this is a baby that needs its mother's milk. You know, so an unweaned child is like frantically kind of rooting around for the mother's breast, kind of with this craving for milk, like probably crying. Having a desire that needs to be satisfied. You know, there's this franticness, there's this focus, seeing the mum as the source of, like, food, and just that. And then, whereas a weaned child, it's a great illustration, a weaned child is a picture of contentment. The weaned child is simply enjoying the way it feels to be in the lap of his or her mother. nestled in, content, not there trying to get anything out of the mother, just happy. Happy, safe, content, satisfied in the warmth and affection and embrace of being on the mother's lap. Can you say that? Like, this is, can you see what's going on here? This is a picture. This is what David is saying, isn't it? I have calmed and quieted my soul. I mean, this is staggering. Like, the soon-to-be king of Israel is saying, I have calmed and quieted my soul like a weaned child. Just happy in God's lap. Just nestled in. David is saying he's satisfied in God. God is the center. David's saying he's not the center. You know, he's like, he's surrendered. You know, such a picture of surrender. Such a picture, isn't it? Of not looking for anything, not going after anything, just surrendered and secure in God's loving presence. But notice he has to intentionally choose to be in this place. Can you see that? Like, there's an action. Actually, in a similar way that he's kind of shut the door on pride, he's actually, there's an action. But I have calmed and quietened my soul. It's like there's a deliberate, intentional action. He's doing, he's done something. He's making this, he's doing this deliberately. I know, just for me, in my sabbatical, I had the opportunity to get a bit of coaching on processing emotions. And one of the exercises I was given was sitting still for 10 minutes every day in a chair and just like not doing anything, not particularly thinking, just breathe in, breathe out, breathe in, breathe out. Just, and actually, when I was doing this to start off with, I could feel like this isn't a spiritual thing. I just felt like there was something in me moving. Like, I could feel myself moving. Like, there was this underground river that was rushing through me. Like, this doesn't feel right. This doesn't feel like I am peaceful. And so, but actually, over a few weeks of doing this, just these 10 minutes, there was a breakthrough. And the breakthrough moment for me came when I realized that God loved my emotions. And it's like, wow. He loves my emotions. The negative emotions, the positive emotions. He loves, I'm made in his image and he loves me. And actually, just, it was like almost overnight. When I was doing those 10 minutes, I could feel like I was by this still water. The rushing river stopped and became a really calm, still, bubbling stream, as we read in Psalm 23. But just, and it's like, oh wow, this is something of what it's like to actually do this verse 2, to calm and quieten my soul, to receive God's love more. You know, I know he loved me. I knew that in my head. But actually to receive his love in my emotions. You know, there's more I could share on this. There's a picture, because one of the other things that I used to do, and I still do all these things. I haven't stopped. This is ongoing. But one of the other things that I used to do was just go for walks. And on one of these walks, we live near where there's like a large lake, and as I was walking sort of past it, I almost missed it, but I could see there was this frog, a very large frog, just kind of slowly lolloping along towards the lake. And I thought, there's something different about that frog. So I went back and had another look, and I saw that actually there was a smaller frog on top. I mean, it was a massive toad. There was a smaller frog on top and being carried along. And God spoke to me in that, because that is like a picture, really, another picture of just flopping on God and just letting him carry us and surrendering to him. So let's just kind of bring this into land then. So there's an intentional action that David did to fight pride. You know, he's looking at these different areas, and then he's going, actually, but this is I'm fighting pride by calming myself, my soul. I mean, I'm focusing on enjoying being in God's presence. And then, I mean, there's just so much more to say on this. Just the whole picture of the disciple that is, you read in the Gospels. You know, there's one disciple that, I mean, Jesus loved all his disciples, but there's one that really received Jesus' love, so much so, John's disciple, that he talks about he'd lay his head on Jesus' breast. You know, like that's another place of stillness and intimacy. So, verse 3. O Israel, hope in the Lord from this time forth and forevermore. So what you have is David is, he knows the joy and the satisfaction and the contentment of being with God. And it's like, Israel, do the same. You know, he's like, he wants everyone to know what he knows. And so this is the good news, isn't it? This is the gospel. This is Jesus, God in the flesh, the only person without sin, the only one that could rescue us from our foolishness, our pride, our just trying to do things, save ourselves. He's the one that's come. Thank Jesus that he loves you. Just reply back. You're our everything, Jesus. You're our everything. We've got nowhere else to go. There's nowhere else worth going to but being in your presence. Nowhere else. We receive your presence right now. We receive your presence.